Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 12th of May. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Horsby.
And the sun is finally shining. Scorchio. I must have brought it back from Zambia, Kev. It's been a long 6 months. Grim, wet, miserable weather in the UK. And honestly, it's amazing to have some sun and dry weather. Roof down on the car, wind in the hair, and some vitamin D on the skin. I mean, you probably take it for granted living in Cairo. But honestly, it's actually been like summer is here now. 24 degrees today, 25 barbecues and everything. It is, really is. Does feel like that we're turning. And it's amazing how much more positivity you get and just general feeling of well-being you get when the sun's out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 33 here. And we avoid the sun until maybe 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's no point in going out of that until later in the afternoon or early in the morning. But as you know, early in the morning, it's not my bag. So,
In the mornings, sort of after the RNS is 7:30 for a long walk, an hour walk, get the sun on the face and then start of the day. As I say, it's been the most, feels like it's been the longest sort of winter and spring going. 6 months, it just feels like wet weather. So it feels like I brought it back from Zambia, but I'm sure that'll all change next week when we go back into situation normal, sort of mid 15 degrees, something else, which is probably more in line with normality. But let's have a look at some of the news this week. I think the main one, being a sort of financial podcast, is that the fact that the UK economy exits recession with 0.6% growth. The UK economy grew by 0.6% in the first quarter of the year, officially exiting recession. This marks the fastest growth in 2 years and surpasses analysts' expectations. Services such as retail, public transport, haulage and health perform particularly well, according to official figures. Chancellor Jeremy Hunt described the news as encouraging, emphasising positive long-term prospects. However, Labour cautioned against celebrating too soon, noting persistent inflation and weak growth over the past 2 years. Good to see us finally exiting this doom and gloom recession.
Yeah, I mean, it was a technical recession, really, wasn't it? It wasn't. We had the recession before, but this has been just minor in terms of what the figures say. But yeah, I don't know. Will it have some optimism in the UK? I don't know. Everybody seems very negative in the UK about what's going on, especially as everybody thinks governments are going to change. You know, be careful what you wish for. I'm not sure Labour's going to deliver anything better than the Conservatives have. Most people are. Conservatives have lied to us, have done lots of things to us. So, you know, we've had enough of them, basically. So, you know, they're going.
It makes me laugh about these interest rates that they're pushing. You know, the fact is that the Bank of England, the interest rates remained at the 5.25%, despite a couple of votes from people wanting it to be cut. And that the Conservatives are playing on it, saying, you know, if we delay the elections till November, a couple of points drop on the interest rates to sort of, you know, 4.75 or 4.5% will ensure that we're doing our job and we will win the next election. I mean, it's like, are they really reliant on that? It's just nonsense.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be good for the economy, but it's ultimately, is it going to win them an election? No, not unless they all change their names and become different people, I think. Because I think everybody's had enough personally with them that policies don't really matter anymore, I think. So, yeah.
You've read Fresh Root Ginger, Fiery Super Roost. Kickstart your day with 13.8 grams of fresh Peruvian ginger. Ginger in this format is very spicy.
Yep. I've got fizzy grapefruit with no sugar. Yeah, interest rates held, but they were signaling reductions. And what we saw then is the British pound jumped a little bit back over the 1.25 in terms of the dollar. Still, I'm not going to stop harping on about it. The dollar is destined to devalue. It has to, has no choice. They're indebted. They've gone past the point of no return, in my view, in terms of how much debt they're cranking up. And let's see what has happened. And you've seen it as well when the dollar prices of gold has now started to move up again at the end of the week. Silver back up to nearly $29 an ounce. And copper is the big one. Please listen to the Zambian special that we put out. It's well worth a listen from good feedback we've already had. $10,000 a ton. all of these projects, you know, Jubilee, Galileo, Extract, African Pioneer, and probably especially African Pioneer because they're drilling with First Quantum, these shares are going to do something.
Yeah. So you know, I'm just looking at all the indexes now, just on SharePad on the you know, the markets around the world, and you know, FTSE is at 84.50 as I speak. Dow Industrial is up 0.85%. S&P 500's up at 5214. Nasdaq 100's up 18113. Nikkei 225's down slightly, but like literally, it's you know, as you just said, like gold was quoted at around 2,366 an ounce. That was early on Friday, higher than the 2,332 on Thursday. So gold just keeps moving its trajectory. Copper's up there, and as I say, FTSE at 84.50. I'm assuming this has got to be all time highs in this area now.
No, it is an all time high. Every day it's becoming
every
an all time high.
It's busting through, and like yeah, it's. I know you were saying that you know you can't judge the small caps, nano caps in the UK on the FTSE 100 alone, but I think you can. It's the health of the economy. It's the health, you know, these are the biggest UK companies. So when will we see the all AIM markets move back into that, you know, in alignment with the FTSE 100? That's the question.
Yeah, no, there's got to be a drip down effect, you would imagine. But maybe with a little bit of time to go before that, but this is a very positive sign. You know, you're going to see these small caps move. When they move, boy, they're going to move. I'm not suggesting which ones necessarily, but they're going to move, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our first guest this week. While we're on the subject of gold, we're delighted to be joined by Professor Richard Conroy and Kevin McNulty of Conroy Gold and Natural Resources. Welcome, gents.
Oh, indeed. Good to see you too.
Very well. Thanks, Phil.
Absolutely. So we just saw the news. The company recently reported something a little different in the form of promising results from two scout drill holes at the Mountain Lodge base metal target in Northern Ireland. The holes intersected significant zinc and lead mineralization, including 30 meters at 0.42 zinc and lead from 9 meters and 1 meter at 1.05% zinc and lead from 20 meters, confirming the presence of mineralization in an extensive 20 square kilometer zinc zone. Encouraged by the results, Conroy Gold plans further drilling to explore higher grade zones within the anomaly. Tell us more about these base metal targets, please, Richard.
The base metal targets really confirm the very extensive mineralized area. We're obviously concentrating and focused on the gold, but this is a very pleasant addition to the general region. And certainly we'd look forward to developing the base metals in association in due course with the many gold targets which we have. So it's just part of the very extensive acreage and very highly mineralized acreage. It's a great mining district that we have in that area. And then, of course, we have a lot of other interests as well that are coming up over the horizon. So we're in a very, very happy position, I must say, at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you've kind of got a history of zinc exploration and production with the Galmoy project that you've alluded to before. Just talk us through the importance of zinc and have you now changed focus away from the gold side of things?
Oh, we certainly haven't changed focus from the gold. The gold is very, very large indeed. It's much larger than Galmoy. Of course, we have a record in gold also. The Pogo gold mine in Alaska was a discovery of ours, and it's still in production as a major gold mine. But the very exciting aspect and a obvious major economic importance and importance to the industry is the fact we've got two entire new gold trends, new district scale gold trends, and we have rights over the entire trends, both of them. And there are a whole series of targets, starting with the Clontibret one, and it in itself looks rather like the Fosterville target in Australia, Fosterville mine in Australia. So it's a very exciting and very considerable gold interest that we have. But as you rightly say, we've also had interest in the past in zinc. And even though we already had in Ireland the Tara mines, the fourth largest zinc mine in the world, there was still a perception that Ireland hadn't got mineral resources. We see this still with the gold, despite the fact that we've got two of the largest gold districts discovered in recent years. People still think to, oh no, there's no gold in Ireland. Well, there is, and there's a great deal of it in actual fact. But we had the same sort of slightly querying attitude when we made our Galmoy discoveries. In fact, we were, again, because we were the first effectively in the field, we were able to make the discoveries, bring it into a mine. And between our mine and Tara and the Chevron mine down the road from us. We were producing over a third of the entire Western European, British and continental requirements for zinc. Zinc is used particularly in the car industry. It's anti-rusting. That's its major use. And there's a huge demand for it. And that demand is going to, of course, greatly increase with the zero economy that's planned zero. So it's very exciting. So we've quite a lot of excitement in Ireland between having such a major gold discovery, which we now want to start putting the emphasis on actually mining it, bringing it into production. And at the same time, it's very nice to see that there's a backup there from the base metals. And indeed, in a sister company, we have a very interesting situation with nickel, copper, which is going to be very, very important, and platinum group metals. And we have also some very interesting work going on out in prospects out in Finland. And we're obviously open always to something which could be world-class and that other people just have overlooked. That's the reason for our success several times over.
Yeah, I think it's very obvious that people have overlooked some of this. So, Kevin, yeah. I will introduce yourself to this situation. Let's first of all talk about Conroy as a whole in terms of the gold. How has the money spent in the ground by Damir progressed the assets that you have in Ireland in terms of the gold?
Significantly. I think, you know, it can be seen by, as Richard stated, a second new gold trend that we've discovered, which we didn't have before, including some spectacular samples that, as you guys are saw when you came over with the visible gold in it down from Crean Kill.
Absolutely. It was twinkling in our eye in the sunshine.
That's it. You know, we're still doing work. That's still very early stage, and we're still doing work around that area, and we're hoping to advance that. And as I say, that second trend, the Skull Martin trend, it's similarly along strike to some of the pretty substantial deposits that people are drilling out at the moment in Newfoundland. You have companies there, Newfound Gold, that are doing substantial amounts of drilling on those type of trends. But concentrating back on ours, we have, as I say, the Skull Martin gold trend, which we've is new. We have the Orlock Bridge fault trend, where we have been doing quite a substantial amount of work in some of our major targets there, particularly in the Clay Lake area, where we had step-out drilling. We did a series of step-out holes, basically building from the intersection that we had there, stepping out 200 metres either side. And we were getting some great hits over 40 metres at over 1.2 grams a tonne in those hits, and some significant widths in some of those intersections as well at over 80 metres intersected. So equivalent to nearly our 80 metres at 0.6 grams, or 100 metres at 0.6 grams a tonne, which we believe is one of the longest gold intersections in the British Isles.
So, Kevin, tell us, First Conroy suggested that Clontibret, which again we've visited, I'd like to explain to people in their minds, it's sort of like a little valley, and we were on the top of that, the left-hand side of that valley where there's a farmhouse, and all of that land is owned by Conroy now. And you then go down into the stream. So how can this be related to Fosterville? What is Fosterville? I mean, everybody talks about Fosterville as a huge gold project. I think you worked on it yourself, possibly, or is that that was the one that was in Africa? Tell me why we think Clontibret is what it is.
Well,
from a geological point of view.
From a geological point of view, Fosterville's actually started out as a small open pit mine, which was a BIOX mine. BIOX is a method of liberating the gold. So the gold was, like Clontibret, trapped in the Arsino pyrite. They needed to break down the Arsino pyrite and free the gold from that. And actually, that's how we started to look at it, because the BIOX characteristics, when we did the BIOX testing, were the exact same as Fosterville. And one of the guys said, you should look at Fosterville and whatever else. And then I started to look into the geology of Fosterville. And this was before Fosterville discovered the Harrier Deep and all those. And it's very similar, same age rocks, Ordovician, Silurian age rocks, same geological setting, where you have a turbidite sequences, in folded sequences, same mineralization style, Arsino pyrite being the primary host for the gold on the high levels in Fosterville, and stibnite associated as a late stage mineralization. As we know, Clontibret was originally discovered from stibnite, an old stibnite mine. And as Richard pointed out, the whole area where we work is historically known as the Monaghan Mining District, where you had stibnite mines and also a lot of these lead zinc mines. But sort of getting back to the Fosterville comparison, so we had all those similarities. You have the same type of veining styles. You have the quartz carbonate veining in it. But Fosterville becomes significant when you drill below 800 meters. You get a significant change in the mineralogy going from a refractory to very much free gold bonanza grade mineralization. We haven't tested that deep in our area. Our deepest drilling has been to about 350 meters depth. So that's one of the things we would like to do going forward, is to look at the potential at depth, going below the 800 meter mark and testing to see if we have similar bonanza style mineralization. And I think, one of the deposits there, they had 2.3 million ounces at over 50 grams a ton. We're in around that. Now, this is just off the top of my head, but I think it was something in around that, which is pretty significant. And it went from being considered a, you know, okay mine to something that was basically world-class production.
But the issue with Clontribute at the minute, or not issue, because it's not an issue, it's a good thing, is that you already have half a million ounces of JORC reported. And, you know, the step out for Clontribute would make that a couple of million ounces, you would imagine, geologically. Is it fair to say that without actually categorically saying, yes, that's the situation?
You would anticipate that we are intersecting. We have gold intersections outside the resource area at the moment. We want to connect those. You can never be sure, but yes, that is the objective, is to grow the resource to well over from half a million ounces to a multi-million ounce project.
So even based on it didn't become a Fosterville, Clontribute as a standalone asset is worth significantly more than your current market capitalization as Conroy Gold. This is a fact.
I think
all I can report is both people are now laughing. Okay. So this is a fact. Okay. Now we move to Clay Lake, which for me, when we visited, was sort of the exciting thing, because you had the interpretation of Clay Lake being a bit like the mine that you were in Africa. So tell us a little bit about that.
So Clay Lake is an extremely big anomaly. It's 3 kilometers long by about 2 kilometers in width, up to 2 kilometers in width. The significance of it is that we are seeing very wide intersections. You know, we are talking at 40 meters at 0.1 grams a ton. These are significant intersections. The mine I worked on in Africa, which I was telling you about, was the Teberebie Gold Mine. And that's still in production now. It's a world-class mine. But we used to have the widths range there from about 20 to 30 odd meters. And the grades range from, you know, 1 to 1.5 grams a ton. So we were producing 350,000 ounces of gold per annum out of that. And this was a 3 kilometer long mine. They are now, I think, producing nearly half a million ounces out of that deposit. And so that's why we are excited about Clay Lake, you know, because we believe the scope is there for the widths and the grades for high tonnage and overall gold content project in that, which means a lot of ounces.
Yeah, and that's blast and dig it out, process it, Bob's your uncle, you've got some gold. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so there for me, even though you have this 65 kilometer strike length or 65 kilometer district and you have another strike, the fact of the matter is that both Clontribute and Clay Lake should be standalone projects on their own, in their own right, in terms of being gold mines, and everything else is a Brucey bonus. Okay, now we come on to the zinc and the lead. Now this is a Brucey bonus. Ultimately, you've obviously seen an anomaly, you've drilled it, you're at the edge of it. I think now it's looking good, but not looking fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about it.
So as I referred, basically the whole area has historic mines. There's over, particularly around this area, there's over 20 historic mines in that area, and was referred to as the Armagh Monaghan Mining District. This anomaly, 20 square kilometres, as I say, we've really honed down into a smaller portion of that, which we're seeing results of over 1,000 ppm in the soils there. Now, we basically tested a zone of nearly about 300 meters, 275 meters of it. And the reason we tested that section first is it had reasonably high, it didn't have the highest zinc and soil parts to it, but it also had a geophysics feature, which we were testing as well, part of that. We drilled it. We saw, as I say, encouraging widths. These are very shallow as well. You're talking from 9 meters down. You know, you're looking at, it's not hundreds of meters down that most of the base metal workings in Ireland generally tend to be, but these are right up at surface. So yeah, 9 meters down, we're seeing 30 meters width, coming up to just over 4% or coming up to 5%. We would like to see that percentage higher. We know it can be achieved. We believe that the grade is increasing to the west, to the area that we have not tested yet, seen by these two drill holes, the two intersections we've seen. So we are very encouraged. And as we go to the west, those soil geochemming increases. You've got directly along the line, the 3,700 ppm, which on the 30th of March 2021, we released as one of the highest results that we've got. But also you're on the trend of where we have, you know, some of the soil values are, you know, over 6,000 ppm zinc. So that's the core area we want to test next, part of that anomaly. And this is where two of those workings, the Tullina Wood, Ochnagorgan workings, actually coalesce together. So we're quite keen on that. As I say, that we had tested the other area because it was associated with a geophysics anomaly, and that's why we went there first.
So, Kevin, is there any gold underneath this, or is the or this is purely going to be zinc-lead?
Purely zinc-lead, but there is the potential for critical metals. With zinc and lead, you can get these critical metals that are very important for the economy going forward, particularly in the UK. You have these metals called yttrium and tellurium, which can be processed as a byproduct out of these zinc-lead mine workings. So,
metals or rare earths?
They're sort of they're metals as part of the processing. You get them in zinc lead deposits, and we've seen it actually in one of the other workings that we had when we did some work on the Kurunurni working. We had some of those results that were high in those type of elements. But as I say, we're also seeing in some of those workings, you know, up to 30% zinc present. So we can get the grades. We just need to find now a nice wide zone with the grades.
Yeah. So, going further north then in Northern Ireland, tell us a little bit about what's happening with Carillion Diamonds. Obviously, you're not the same company, but you are effectively, as you all work for the same two companies. What's happening in the north of Ireland? Whereabouts exactly is it in Northern Ireland? Because I'm going to be coming to visit you anyway in a month's time to talk about this. So tell us exactly where it is and what's the situation with that, Kevin, in terms of the work you've done.
Well, it's situated in Fermanagh. We started looking around a place called Brookborough, where a historical diamond was found called the Brookborough Diamond. And we actually met and saw the diamond, which is fantastic. And we knew that...
Did somebody drop it out their engagement ring, or it was definitely there geologically?
Well, we don't know. That's why we started looking there. But it was found back in the
80s. Someone's messing with you. You've got the Clay Lake Nugget, you've got the Brookborough Diamond. I mean, someone's just winding you up, right?
Well, that's how things are found. You start looking where sort of something unusual has happened, and that's how you follow it up. So, yeah, that's what we did. Basically, we would have looked very silly having a diamond company in Finland and not chasing up this diamond that had been found in Ireland, in as I say, in the Brookborough estate. And some chromites had been found there as well. So we thought, okay, we'll give it a look. And it was very much a tentative look. We took some samples, sent them off to ODM, which is our laboratory in Canada. And these are large samples. These are 10 kilos. It's not like the gold. These are quite big, intensive samples which have to be shipped. Those get concentrated out, and you're literally picking the indicator minerals out of it. So it's a lot more labor intensive and intensive than doing a sort of soil sampling program that you do for base metals or gold. But when we got those results in, the lab sort of talked to us and said, there's no indicator minerals here for diamonds, but there is a lot of indicator minerals for basically nickel, copper, platinum and group elements. And then we started looking at some of those chromites that were in there, and they actually had pentalite mineralization, which is basically a nickel sulfide mineralization in it. So we know a mineralization event has occurred because the mineral is already present in some of the chromites we have seen. So now we need to find the source of that mineralization. So we've been doing a lot of work recently looking at the regional picture, and we have expanded our license holdings in that area. But we're really chasing the dike systems, and there's another area which is known as the Dunmore Gravity High. And it's those areas that we're targeting at the moment and looking at in a regional context to refine. But we believe we're pretty close to tying some of that stuff down. So it's quite exciting, very new for me. I haven't been involved with anything like this before. But we have gone out and we're looking at talking with other people who have industrial experience in these type of things, which are giving us good advice.
And what would be the main elements then that you would be getting there? Copper?
Nickel, copper, platinum group elements. So platinum. And again, when you were talking about the Clay Lake Nugget, there's actually a platinum nugget found up in, and which actually sits in the museum beside the gold.
This is a leprechaun.
Yeah,
it's
having
been
messing with you
having
guys.
Some
I mean,
crack.
It's been
kind of
discovered back in 1813.
It was discovered on the beach. In Cairn, it was a good Cairn, I think it is. Yeah, Cairn Beach. And it was discovered. And people thought actually this came from the ballast of a Russian ship. There's been papers written about this, and it was thought that it was found from the ballast from a Russian ship. But actually, there's been some quite serious work done. And if you look at the chemistry on this, the chemistry is similar to some of the stuff that's been found. There's actually small bits of mineralization found in the Republic of Ireland related to it. So it's a very interesting thing to be working in at the moment.
So let's jump across the sea and go to Finland. Tell us about the licenses that Conroy has in Finland. Gold licenses, I think there's copper there as well. You did have some dealings with Rio Tinto, I think, until, was it 2020? So tell us what's happening there and what is it?
Well, we have some gold exploration. It's very early stage. We have some gold exploration, but we have done quite a bit of work regionally in those areas. We have an IOCG target up in Sedankylä that we're looking at the moment. Again, very early stages, but the indications are there that there could be something very interesting there from the soil geochemistry that we're seeing and pit results that we got. So, but as I say, it's still very early stage.
And then moving across to Conroy Gold. Sorry, not Conroy Gold, Carillion Diamonds.
Yep.
You got the diamond licenses over there in Finland. You're about, I think, to agree about compensation and boundaries and stuff, which is going to happen in the middle of May, I think, 21st of May. And then hopefully you will have the license then from mid-June. I think it's a 30-day period of time. So what position is that going to put Carillion Diamonds in terms of the ability then to move forward?
Well, that will enable us to work fully on Latioki and start to progress towards bringing that into a mine. So it's a mining license, so we can do the next steps that are needed, which is the bulk sampling and testing all the kimberlite. But basically, it's a mining license which will allow us to take that forward. And as I say, we're also doing work in and around the area because we believe there's potential for extra resources in that area, as been seen by some boulders that have been found in the till to the south, which are not the same type of kimberlite as what Latioki is. And we have quite a lot of data, and particularly with Terry now on board on our team, who is a fantastic exploration geologist who has experience. And she was originally involved with the bulk sampling in Latioki and quite involved with the Latioki project. So she brings a huge wealth of experience in relation to Finland as well. So we're quite excited how we're moving forward with that. And as I say, can't wait to get the mining license and start getting the work underway.
And is it true, Professor Conroy, that it seems to be that Rio Tinto is buying up a lot of the stuff around where you are?
Yeah.
They want to basically secure this colored diamond market because it's going to be very valuable for them.
It could be very important, and indeed Latioki, one of the attractions of it is that it has a significant percentage of coloured diamonds. And of course, in our exploration work, I think it's fair to say Kevin has been very successful. We have a green diamond already, and we seem pretty close to the bit of luck, obviously, to the source of it.
Yeah.
And the great, of course, significance of this is, I think it's fair to say, Kevin, that in geological terms, the Finnish part of the Carillion Craton is very similar to the Russian part. And in the Russian part, they've made two of the largest diamond discoveries in the world. The Lomonosov is, I think, second largest.
I wanted to ask you while you're on, Kevin, about that. I mean, I saw the results that came out with the electron microbe analysis that were done, and there was something like 19 G10, 19 G9. Can you just explain, just like in layman's terms, what these different G values mean and how, you know, in the hunt for this elusive green diamond at Kumo, because it was fascinating to look at these sort of these windows in the diamond stability field and all these things. But can you really just explain how close you feel you are to finding this elusive green diamond source?
Yeah, maybe if I sort of take it back to sort of the basics. Basically, a kimberlite is like a volcano. So you can imagine this eruption, like what we've seen, we've recently all seen in the news in Iceland, these cracks and rifts where all this magma is being ripped up and brought up. Well, they're the type of vents and structures that bring up diamonds that are formed at depth. Okay, these are formed at over 500 kilometers below the surface, and they're brought up rapidly. Okay, but as the diamonds are brought up, they bring up other material with it as well. And these other materials include these garnets, which are the G10s and G9 garnets, that form at the same temperatures and pressures as the diamonds. Okay, there have been lots of studies about this and they know. But they are more common in the kimberlite than the diamonds. So that's why you look for these type of minerals. But then there's, of these diamonds, there's really crucial ones, which are known as G10Ds. And they are actual garnets that form in diamonds. So what they've done is taken a whole series of diamonds and found garnets in them and looked at the chemistry of those garnets within those diamonds. And they all form in this little envelope. And that envelope was referred to as G10Ds. And that means that those, they only come from there, where the diamonds are actually forming. Okay, and that's why those are so significant. So not only have we got the evidence of a green diamond occurring, but we have all these good garnet indicators that come from the diamond stability field from within diamonds. So that shows that this kimberlite has taken that material from that level where the diamonds form and transported it up to surface. Now, where is it on surface? We believe it is close by on surface. And the reason we believe that is a lot of these garnets have this skin, which is on it, called a calafritic rim, okay? And a lot of the garnets are relatively large in size. This skin gets knocked off. If these garnets get moved around in the till or whatever else, that gets knocked off relatively easily, okay? And the size of the garnets, they break down. The largest garnets break down into smaller ones if they get moved around too much. So we're seeing large garnets with this calafritic rimming, which we believe only occur when you're relatively close to the source. Plus, we're getting them at a lower till level as well, which also indicates we're closer to the source. And we have some geophysics features that we want to follow up in relation to that. So we're pretty excited that we're getting close to the source of where the green diamond is.
Yeah. So do you think that within the next, say, you know, 5-6 months of extra exploration and digging around, you could potentially discover some more diamonds?
I'm hoping within, like, as we always hope, within our next, certainly I hope within the next couple of phases, certainly in the next phase or the next couple of phases of our work, that we will have the source for the green diamond. And that's what we're aiming for.
Kevin, if I posed you a question as a geologist, if you know you have 20 million euros, how are you going to spend it between Conroy and Carillion? What are you going to spend it on first?
Two separate companies, so that's a bit of a tricky one.
Okay, well, let's see. let's see. Carillion gets 5 million euros and Conroy gets 15. What are you going to do?
Well, I think obviously with Carillion going first, we obviously want to find the source for the green diamond. Yeah, so that's
maybe what you should do is use 5 million of it and buy Carillion, and then it all becomes one company.
Well, that's not a decision for me to make.
It's a geological question, so go for it. How would you spend the money?
Originally, when I started.
okay.
But obviously we want to, again, move Latioki on. So joking aside, that is a serious project. It's a mine. We've got a mining license there, and we want to bring that into production. So that's, you know, we would still like to do some exploration, but really our focus needs to be bringing a mine in, getting some revenue from that. And we believe Latioki is quite significant and economic, particularly with the coloured stones. It's going to have an added value in relation to that.
And 5 million euros would do that, or you would need more?
Well, you won't get the build of the mine, but you'll get the bulk sampling probably underway or nearly done. You'll get quite a lot of the work done in around that. So, yeah, you'd progress the project significantly, I think. And don't forget, you're already got your mining license. So what the things you need to do now is demonstrate, get a parcel big enough of stones. So you probably want about 2,000 carats from the bulk sample. So we would want to set up a small plant to test it. And then we would want to do some more environmental works in around it, baseline environmental studies. So they're the main things we want to.
Okay, very good. And in Conroy Gold, what would you do?
Conroy Gold, I think, you know, I have 15 million, which is great. I'm going to put the 15 million in the bank and we'll get a major to spend the money for us on the project. But no, joking aside, I think, yeah.
You get the major to give you another 15.
15 million on top. I think that's hopefully what we wanted it to do, because it's such a huge project. You know, 15 million won't even probably scratch the surface on some of these areas. But certainly the focus is, again, bringing in a mine, looking at Clontibret and doing some more work there in relation to testing the depth potential at Clontibret and adding to the resources. I think further step out drilling on the Derry Hennet Clay Lake area. We want to do that. And then I think we want to do a bit more work on the cream kill target. So they're my three sort of main priorities on it, probably with the majority going towards Clontibret, second then the Clay Lake area, and then third to the cream kill. But cream kill could be the most exciting part of it. So
Is it potential that particular target, and even if it's only a small area or an open pit type scenario, that could be sort of a 4 or 5 gram per ton open pit that would obviously pay for itself within a matter of a few months?
Yep.
Is that a possibility?
Yeah, well, we're getting grades up to 123 grams a ton, so I would hope it would be more than 4 or 5 grams a ton that we're seeing from there. So, we're seeing meter sections at 64 grams a ton. So, yeah, you know, we need a lot of dilution to bring it down to 5.
Okay, I'm playing devil's advocate. And the reality is you're seeing that at surface, no?
Yes.
So this really is a good candidate for a shallow open pit, and the economies on that could be fantastic in terms of literally digging it up, sticking it through the processor, and you know, you have gold production, if you like. Obviously, you've got to go through the different phases of mining that need to happen to get the mining license and stuff, but it's a possibility. So I think we've covered most things. I mean, if all of these things come off, Professor Conroy, then basically you would be a major in the UK, no? I mean, in all honesty, the amount of potential within these two companies is just vast.
On a fairly large scale with Galmoy and then transforming Ireland into an international zinc province. But it pales in comparison to what we have in relation to the gold. I think people haven't even begun to realize. And it's great to see it all coming together. There's been a huge amount of work done over many years by Kevin and his colleagues. But it's now all coming together. And the way these things happen is coming together in a number of directions. And you mentioned, I think, 500,000 ounces there, which is a resource at Clontibret. Gold at the moment is just over $2,000 an ounce. And we're possibly looking at a lot of gold. Now, you can't directly extrapolate $2,300 for gold that you're actually selling as compared to gold in the ground. But nonetheless, the sort of figures that we're potentially looking at are very serious figures by any standards, including major gold industry standards. You're quite right about that. And we're in the great position in that we totally control both of these gold trends. The usual situation in gold exploration is somebody or other has an idea there might be a gold trend, and half a dozen companies perhaps go searching around, and two or three of them find, let us say, one thing. One finds, shall we say, Clontibret, another finds Crinkill, the third finds the Longford Down, the fourth finds something else. And so it goes on, and a number of them are unlucky. But the situation here, with various majors, when they've come to visit us and do site visits, you have the entire district? And we say, yes, we have. I don't think there's any other company in our position. So we'll be sitting down now and looking at the situation and talking with the various people who are coming to talk with us and that sort of thing. But it could be very big indeed.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at Clontibret, if you got $50 an ounce for in-ground gold on your JORC report, that's $25 million.
Absolutely.
Which is, what, £18 million. And your current market cap is £5 million. Okay, so there is a complete mismatch in what's going on here. And Clontibret is not a £500,000 resource, or sorry, £500,000 resource either, or 500,000 ounce resource. It's bigger. And Clay Lake is probably bigger again. And the other one that you talked about is bigger again. And you have assets in Finland. And you now have the potential for zinc lead.
That's a project pipeline, yeah.
Carillion is the same in terms of once this license comes in Finland. I mean, again, you're going to increase the value of the company just by having that license. I mean, you should increase the value of the company by double at least, because at the minute you can't do anything. Once you have that license, then obviously an increased valuation will come. So we look forward to seeing what's going to happen. I look forward to seeing you guys in about 4 weeks when I'll be in Northern Ireland, and then
God help you both. I don't know.
Come and see. I'm looking forward to my completely overdone Sunday lunch.
Help him by the time we walked around here and walked around there.
Absolutely, he'll be there looking for that Brookbury diamond monocle.
That's right. If I can find a diamond, I'm keeping it. I'm looking forward to my completely overcooked Sunday lunch as well. So make sure you sort that out. And
get the oven on now. Put it in now.
Put it in a month's time, it'll be about right.
That's beef. That's
very good.
Good. Yeah. And we wish you luck in all of these things. We wish you luck in negotiations, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Not necessarily a queue, but I'm sure there are majors sniffing around this because they need big gold projects. It's as simple as that. And same with the diamonds as well. I'm sure, without mentioning any names, Rio, probably very interested in what you're doing in Finland, but good luck.
On that note, we'll say Professor Richard Conroy and Kevin McNulty of Conroy Gold and Natural Resources, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, let's move on to some of the movers and shakers of the week. The best mover, 5 days, and bear in mind that we had a short week this week because obviously bank holiday Monday was there, wasn't it? So the best mover was MBT, Mobile Tornado Group. They were up some 150%. They secured a contract through the regional partners to supply the push-to-talk over cellular, PTTOC, and workforce management solutions for a major mobile network operator in the Middle East and Africa. The MNO, serving over 50 million customers, chose Mobile Tornado's technology for its low latency, low data usage, and compatibility across 2G to 5G and Wi-Fi networks. So that was good to see. I mean, I thought push-to-talk technology over cellular was dead in the water. You know, you see it used in the US a lot in the sort of early 2000s, but I really didn't think that kind of CB radio style push to talk and hear it come through was even there. So obviously there's a market for it in the Middle East and Africa. We heard Helix Exploration, one we've covered in the past, David Minchin on the board, HEX, H-E-X is the ticker, recently IPO'd on the 9th of April. On the 23rd of April, they had news that they'd secured a contract with Treasure State Drilling to use a drilling rig for the Q3 2024 appraisal drilling at the Ingomar Dome project. That share price has moved from about 10p on IPO to 20 pence in the last week. So it's good to see those an IPO actually doing something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's good that there was an IPO first.
Yeah. What's that?
and the second thing is good that it went up.
What else have we had this week? I know gold and metals, obviously, we spoke to Oliver in the week on the Tuesday. They provided the exploration update for the Pilot Mountain project, the project that just seems to keep on delivering. And it was all about that copper porphyry south target, wasn't it?
Yeah, which has just looked like another potential positive. We also had on Friday there, which was the 1 year anniversary, which shock horror was my birthday. And also the warrants were expiring. So if you hadn't sent any money in and said you wanted your warrants by Friday. So we should expect an RNS on Monday, I think, with any of the warrants that have gone through, which should mean that GMET have got maybe £2 million in the bank and ready to drill. And this is another porphyry asset or potential porphyry on Pilot Mountain. They're already drilling now on Pilot Mountain for the tungsten, which has also got the garnets and also silver. And then obviously you've got Garfield as well. So I expect for the last, 2 months, there's been an element of selling for people to then take up the warrants. From next week, that's going to stop. And we'll see where we go. Because I think it's going to go much higher.
Yeah.
And if it does get the grant from the US government, then I think you're going to double or treble the share price here, probably. I mean, it's hard to say. And as the results come in from Pilot Mountain, especially with the tungsten, if these other three targets come in as similar to the initial jorked tungsten deposit, then all bets are off. I think it's going to be worth hundreds of millions, in my view.
Yeah, as you say, on the Friday, it was the anniversary. So ultimately, it was, I think Oliver tweeted like happy warrant expiry day or something like that with some balloons. So it's, and a lot, you know, they had a good number of those exercised and cash, as you say, coming into the coffers. There was a good article put out, Oliver put out on X, from the Northern Mine. I don't know if you saw it, but basically it said that the mining giant BHP and Ivanhoe Electric have partnered to explore for copper and other critical minerals in selected areas of the US, where they would potentially form 50-50 joint ventures. And so it was, you know, the announcement was there, I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday of the week, that the alliance is structured in two phases, like the project generation and joint venture, and then the exploration activities leading to possible development and operation of mining projects. So it was very, very interesting to see these big companies, you know, pushing out to see, and, you know, what a great area, you know, if potentially they are looking, and this, then the Pilot Mountain does turn out to be the porphyry that they expect it to be. Who knows, you know, if the big mining giants like BHP and Ivanhoe are looking for projects, then, you know, it may be there.
Yeah. They're teaming up to look for copper, and here it is. It's like, yeah. So, and there's advancements. We talked about it with Oliver in the interview, didn't we? You know, they've still got the gold that they haven't looked at. There's lithium there as well that we haven't even mentioned, you know. So, and the potentially huge, or not huge, but very high grade gold in Garfield as well, you know. So, There are lots of good things as well.
Yeah.
Celadon raised some money this week as well. Sort of that puts a cap on it, I think. They basically said that's all they're going to get. So I think hopefully you're going to see an uptick in that. Had a quick chat with Jim Short, is it, from Celadon. And yeah, you guys still, Phil, you still need to go and visit the Celadon.
Yeah, definitely going to go up facility. What was something down? There was something related to the termination of the CLNs, wasn't there? I think that was announced on the same.
All he was basically saying was originally they were gonna raise money as CLNs and they were gonna raise money as equity. So yeah. The CLNs no longer, but they have managed to get a greater facility, at £7 million, I think it is. For a loan facility. So, yeah. I mean, from a point of view of equity shareholders, that's a good sign. I think, you know, it basically means that that dilution is not going to be tied in. I'm expecting news from this over the summer. From what Jim has said to me, he hasn't told me anything. He's just said there's stuff coming. So, you know, I think there's potentially some good stuff coming. We also had some results from Kavango out there in Zimbabwe. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I was reading that one. That looked good, didn't it? That came in from the Hillside Prospect 3 gold project in, as you say, Matabeleland in southern Zimbabwe. There was hole NSD drilled to, I think it's about 300 meters, and they intersected multiple shear zones with gold-bearing quartz veins and sulfide mineralization. 40-meter grading above, it's about 0.5 grams per ton of gold. And there were some best results. We included about 5 meters at 1.7 gram per ton from 97 meters, and then about 11.9 meters at 0.92 from 148. So yeah, it looks like the geophysical data suggests that Prospect 2 and Prospect 3 lie on opposite sides of a 600 meter wide deformation zone extending 1.2 kilometers to Prospect 1. Ben said, didn't he, that emphasized the potential scale of the shear system and the need for further exploration to confirm the extensive mineralized system. So yeah, it looks good, that one. And they've also got the Botswana project as well. So, I definitely want to keep on the radar there.
Yeah, I had a quick message with him on WhatsApp then on Friday morning saying he was in Harare and he would try and catch up with us on Monday or Tuesday next week. So watch out for that. I think it'll be an interview or something early next week just to give us a bit more background about those results. And hopefully we're going to go out there anyway, because we're going to go to Zimbabwe for a few of the other assets as well in different companies. And we want to look at Kavango as well, because came to our attention because Paul Johnson, he's a big fan of what they're doing, and the assets look massive. Now, when you think about it, think about the junior market. They just raised 3 million quid, you know, 1.2p, I think it was. And now they're 1.3p. So obviously, that money has got sticky, hasn't gone down. And, you know, let's see where this all goes, because 3 million quid in the ground in Zimbabwe could make a hell of a difference. And obviously Botswana, from what you're saying as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting one, isn't it, that they've got, I think, in terms of like on the listing itself, on these small caps, they've got something like 52% of the shareholding is by a company called Pure Bond, which I think is one of the Middle Eastern backers. There's a big family of them who've come into the stock. So it's held very tightly. And they're funding, the pure bond are funding a lot of the projects, aren't themselves. And I think they've got like a drawdown facility on it. Pretty sure that's what Ben said. But as I say, I've looked on the share structure now, and it's like 52.47% held by pure bond. A few directors, you know, Hillary Gumbo, about 1.2%, Peter B, 5%, Jarvis, that's probably just nominee accounts, and Hargreaves around the sort of 10%. So there's not, when you look on the actual share structure, there's not a massive amount of free flow available in this one. So, yeah, interesting one, interesting share structure.
Yeah, let's come back to Conroy and Carillion. What are your thoughts, having just interviewed these guys again? Obviously, we've interviewed them quite a few times, but I think things are starting to hot up. So what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're both very interesting in terms of the, you know, the zinc area that they've pushed out. I didn't really have too much in it. Sort of felt, I knew there was base metal targets, but I didn't really realize that they were still being, you know, looking for them or doing any kind of work on them. So it came as a bit out of the blue, that RNS. Interesting. Absolutely, you know, as I say, that, you know, Prof has got history with the Galmoy project, so that could be, you know, it's obviously very close to his heart. He's proven that he's delivered that in the past. In terms of the nickel prospects in for Carillion as well, that you're going to go and visit, that one certainly looks interesting. And Kev McNulty, the geologist who we just spoke to, he seems very excited about what could be lying down there in the Northern Ireland. And then obviously Carillion in Finland and Sweden, with the whole kind of like the diamond element of things, I think that's what excites me more than anything in terms of that is that this hunt for this elusive green diamond. And that's why I wanted Kevin, when I asked him about these garnets and the G10s and G9s and the windows and all those sort of things, I wanted to just him to explain the significance and relevance of finding garnets in those assays that they've looked at and those different holes. And I think if they can get this license, there's obviously the court hearing date on the 21st, which we alluded to, which hopefully they'll get that license, and it's all to do with the pushing the boundaries. Once all that's granted and they can get, you know, move on to the next phase and start doing the hunting around, then I think it's going to be amazing. Like I think the potential from the current market cap on this stock, Carillion and Conroy as well, sub 5 million, is just absolutely laughable. I know there's going to be a lot of the naysayers saying, well, you know, why did Demir walk away and all these sort of things? Well, it doesn't look like that. And I'd like to think that they can bring in somebody else, another JV partner on those assets. And as Kevin said, like what they have learned from that phase one exploration, you know, drilling the many, many meters of drilling that they did on the two different projects has been, you know, invaluable. So, yeah, very much excited about Carillion, seeing how that all pans out, and yeah, watch the space.
Yeah, I agree. So Teck Minerals, we haven't really spoken about it in a few weeks because they had this deal to sell the lithium asset, still needs to be finalized. But to be honest with you, if this finalizes itself, and it looks like it is just administration now that needs to be sourced out, this is a $10 million sale. Now, $10 million in today's rate is what? 8 million pounds? And the current market cap of Teck Minerals is 8 million and a few odd change. So purely from a financial position at this moment in time, is Teck Minerals worth more than it looks like? And actually, the shares that they're going to receive from the other company were actually valued up more than the 10 million within a couple of days. I don't know where it stands at the minute. So yeah, hopefully we're going to be catching up with Alex and Robin in the next few weeks. But I mean, basically, it looks like it's on sale basically at the moment. What did you think about Sovereign Metals? We were trying to catch up with Sapan this week as well.
Yeah, Sovereign had a very good. They've had two RNSs out since we last talked, but the most recent one was they announced a successful graphite test work for the Kasia Rutile graphite project. A high quality concentrate. They sent them to four independent laboratories of samples, and they produced high grade graphite concentrate, averaging 97% total graphite content, which from what Sapan says is excellent recoveries, with flotation recoveries exceeding 90%. The exceptional purity, the concentrate displayed exceptional low sulfur levels, meeting key criteria for the battery anode material. And also, as we've talked to in the past, this unique low cost process. The Kasia ore with 1.4% TGC, upgraded to over 55% in rougher concentrate without crushing or milling, highlights the project's unique low-cost characteristics. There's ongoing test work. Downstream testing continues at the ProGraphite GmbH in Germany to produce and characterize coated spherical purified graphite for battery anodes. And the MD, Frank, said that Kassir will be a standout producer of high-quality graphite concentrate at industry-low operating costs. So really exciting to see it. And Sapan sent a tweet out, didn't he, in the week, or Sovereign did, showing all the processing and all the graphite in these laboratories being moved around. So, yeah, it looks very exciting, does this whole Kassir project.
Yeah, and it's just been creeping up, hasn't it? It's moved from sort of the 24, 23 to 28 now. It's nothing amazing, but I think it's going to be in the 30s fairly shortly. And we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, 52-week range is 20 to 30p. Yeah. So once it breaks out of that 30p, you know, where is it going?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, fundamentally, based on the project happening, it's worth a lot more than it currently is anyway.
Absolutely.
And KOT also had an announcement this week as well. What were your thoughts on that one? It looks like a good partnership.
Yeah, I mean, it looked good. They announced a new partnership basically with the BSI group. So obviously the BSI is the British Standards Institute and supplier of impactful solutions to organisations worldwide. And I think there was an initial order with it, but BSI Disc Digital Risk Advisory is respected for its ability to help organisations navigate the complex landscape of digital risks and develop robust strategies to protect their assets and reputations. Kerry Chambers, who we've obviously had on many times on the podcast, commented, "We're thrilled to announce our new partnership with BSI Group. This collaboration marks a significant milestone for Acuity Risk Management, and we're excited to join forces with such a highly regarded global authority in the field of digital risk advisory. And we also look forward to a partnership that will not only provide services, but will shape the future of risk management. Our goal is to empower organizations to thrive in an increasingly complex digital landscape." So not only have they got BBC as a customer, as she alluded to on the last podcast we did, but also now British Standards Industry or British Standards Institute, BSI, are on board with them. So great to have these big high-profile customers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke with Angus during the week and said, "Jane, shall we do something about this?" And he says, "No, hold off." So read into that where you want.
Absolutely. So the other thing that came in was sometimes, you know, we get emails from listeners. So one came in from Drew. He said, "Hi, Phil and Kevin. Thanks for the great Sunday roast and midweek takeaway podcast. Awesome trip to Zambia. Amazing spot. Have worked up there on a tributary on the Kafue for a hydropower scheme. So quite get your descriptions, jungle, remote, etc. A great Zambia special release yesterday, and I am particularly interested to get your feedback coverage of Jubilee Metals' Roan concentrator, as you met with Leon in Johannesburg after visiting the chrome plant and chatted about going up to Roan at Ndola. Very conspicuous by its complete absence. Is it coming at stage? Perhaps info that can't be released as yet, Drew." So no, absolutely. There's nothing sinister or conspiracy on there. Basically, it was just a timing thing, wasn't it? Because we were up there on a bank holiday Monday and we wanted to fit it in.
Zambian bank holiday Monday.
Zambian bank holiday. Nothing ever open. And we obviously had to fly down to get down to Lusaka to get out to see the other assets. So it would have meant cancelling those to fit the Tuesday, Wednesday visit into Roan. So obviously, part of what we saw for Jubilee on the trip was the Windsor plant, the new one, because we saw Anyoni last year, and this year we saw the Windsor 8 chrome, which was fascinating. And we also went to see the Muffalera slag project as well in the north. So ultimately, next time we visit, definitely going to take on the Roan and the Sable to see how they've come online and moved on since we were last there.
But what I would say is that from the interview that if you listen to that in the previous Sunday roast, like two weekends ago, I think it was, we did interview Leon, and you know, Roan's coming on, should be online in the next few weeks, and you know, ready to rock and roll. And Sable is being upgraded, as you know. So Sable's being upgraded so it can now cope with, I think it's 24,000 tons a year of copper cathode. And yeah, we did see the Muffalera slag project, which is just vast. Yeah, all of these things with a $10,000 copper price is going to make lots of money. And the other one I want to mention is East Star Resources. You know, this copper sale, which they said they're going to put the VMS system up for sale, basically, or up for a deal, is coming to fruition, must be coming to fruition shortly. Current market cap of about £9 million. I think they're going to get at least £9 million or more for this sale, if you like, of what they're going to do, either the sale or a JV, so they'll have revenue very shortly. And they've still got all these BHP, the BHP grant and the BHP porphyry that they're looking to try and identify in Kazakhstan. So I personally think myself that E-Star's looking very, very, very attractive, especially if they can get a sale away and get some cash into the business, either by an outright sale or by production that will happen probably within months, because it literally is dig it up and take it to the processing plants. So yeah, I still think it's going to be all about copper going forward. This next few months, is, in my view, is going to be about copper, about gold, about silver, all of these different resources come into play. And why? Yes, because in dollar terms, they're going to be worth significantly more. In my view, there is almost no doubt this is what is going to happen, partly because of the indebtedness of the US and partly because they're in demand. They are required, especially the copper. We've seen now that the deficit has been brought forward. It's going to be a deficit. There was a Goldman Sachs article out this week saying that they expect it to be 12,000 by the end of this year and averaging between 12 and 15,000 in 2025. Well, what does that do to any of those projects, Phil?
Well, it makes them, brings them online, doesn't it? Makes them more economically viable. You know, there's a lot of, it's like anything, isn't it? You see these mines that are under care and maintenance or not even potentially projects at the cost of, say, $8,000 to $9,000 on the ton. But as soon as it busts through certain 10, 11, 12, then people start to bring, and it also creates a rush. I mean, we saw the rush in Zambia for people wanting to bring these mines on. And the people we were talking to on the ground were saying straight away, like, now that the price of copper has hit that 2-year high, everybody's scrambling to find the ore. And, you know, the Chinese are screaming at these mine owners saying, we want the ore, just bring us the rock.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you also look at the one we've followed for a long time, which everybody was crying about, which is the extract deposit in Australia. Is it viable at 12,000?
You think so?
Boy, it is. Okay, so does it now have more of a value? Yeah, extract is valued currently at probably what it's going to receive in cash, and a bit less actually, that it's going to receive in cash from the sale of the mine down in Mozambique. So yeah, where does it go from here with its assets? And I mean, we saw one of its assets in Silver King, didn't we, and the Zambia thing. Again, I point you to the Zambia special if you want to hear what we were up to and what we went to visit, because it was very, I think it's very informative. We've had some good feedback from quite a few people. So grab a listen if you haven't. And yeah, good luck.
Absolutely. I don't think there's anything else to add. So I'm going to wrap up here and get out in there and enjoy the sun.
Indeed.
Right. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, hit the subscribe button and also hit the bell icon, then you get any future notifications of any future episodes.
Yep, thanks guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.